as he was praying alone, the disciples were with him, and he asked them, "Who do the crowds say that I am?" And they answered, "John the Baptist, but the others say Elijah, and the others that one of the prophets of the old has arisen." And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered, "The Christ of God." And he strictly charged them and commanded them to tell this to no one, saying, "The Son of Man must suffer many things, and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day he will be raised." And he said to all, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross daily, and follow after me. For whoever would save his own life will lose it, but whoever will lose his life for my sake will save it. For what does a man profit if he gains the whole world, but he loses himself? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words, of him will the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. But I tell you truly, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they have seen the kingdom of God."
Thank you, Connor. There are only a few sports with which I am familiar that a person can win by scoring the lowest number. And one of them is golf, and the other is darts. If they would change the game of golf so that the highest score wins, there would be no one on the face of the earth that could beat me. In fact, I would go down as the greatest golfer in history, and my name would be more popular than Tiger Woods. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. In golf, you're not really competing against other golfers in that sport. You really are actually competing against the course. So the players usually play several practice rounds before they start, the actual tournament. And when they play their practice rounds, they're analyzing the course, such as like the distance to the greens, the slopes of the greens, the placement of the hole on the green, the length and the width of the fairways, where the traps are, and probably a lot of the other aspects that I'm not even aware of. And oftentimes their caddy goes with them to kind of help them analyze the course. And those practice rounds help prepare the golfer to take the fewest number of strokes. So what really wins a golf tournament is the quality of a golfer's strokes, not so much the quantity. Which means in golf, less is more. Some people describe life as a game, and the one with the most toys wins, but actually life is very similar to golf in that life is about quality and not quantity. God is more concerned about the quality of your life than the quantity within your life. Because like golf, the greater the quantity, the more difficult it is to win in life. Today I want to share with you another question that Jesus asked. As a matter of fact, Connor read it for us a few moments ago. The question was intended to help us win in life. And in life, just like golf, less is more. We really have to lose in order to win in life. The audience to whom Jesus asked this particular question is revealed in Luke chapter 9, verse 18. It reads, "Now it happened that as he was praying alone, the disciples were with him." So the audience to whom Jesus directed this particular question was his disciples. But before he asks them this question, he queries them about, who people are saying he is. And the disciples answered, you know, they said, well, some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, others say one of the prophets of old. Jesus then asked his disciples who they think he is. And Peter, of course it would be Peter, answered and said, well, you're the Christ of God. And Jesus then said he didn't want them to tell anyone that because, you know, he must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. So Jesus was trying to keep somewhat of a low profile as long as he could during his ministry so he could reach as many people as possible prior to his death. Immediately following this revelation about his rejection and death at the hands of the religious leaders, he told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Now, I don't know if you noticed or not, but there is something unusual, you know, about that statement. He told his disciples to take up their cross. And this is prior to the crucifixion. I mean, they don't even know yet how he's going to die or that he's going to die. So you would think that would be a little confusing for the disciples. Like, what do you mean, take up your cross? You know, we of course know what it means because we know the end of the story, but they didn't. One of the explanations that I found made the most sense to me, explained that crucifixions were very common in that day. You know, it was also common practice for a criminal to carry his own cross at least part of the way to the crucifixion site. And we know that Jesus was forced to do that, at least for part of the way. And as the victim carried his cross through the city, it symbolized an admission of guilt that the Roman Empire was right and the victim was wrong. So when Jesus insisted here that his followers take up their crosses and follow him, he was referring to a public display indicating that Jesus was right. And because of that, his disciples were following him even to their deaths. And Jesus followed that up in verse 24 with a somewhat paradoxical statement. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. In other words, in order to win in life, you have to kind of lose your life, meaning you give your whole life over to God. In one sense, the disciples were already doing that. I mean, they each had, you know, left their means of earning an income and were putting themselves in danger just by following Jesus. And so Jesus reassured them that they were making the right choice. And if that was the right choice for them, is it not the right choice for you? You know, in order to emphasize that they were making the right choice, Jesus then asked a rhetorical question in verse 24, which is the question I want you to think about for a few minutes this morning. Well, actually longer than a few minutes. And the question was, for what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? In other words, what is the benefit of focusing all of your time, energy, and resources on the things of this world, only to have to forfeit your life for eternity? Every one of us needs to consider that question. You know, what is your focus in life? What is your main focus? Is it yourself? Or is it God? You know, is it this life or the next? You know, some of you may remember the Francis Chan rope illustration about life that I showed one Wednesday night in class, and then I think I showed the video of it one Sunday morning. And Bryant Myers, if you were here Wednesday, he used that illustration as he was making his presentation this past Wednesday. But it's on YouTube if you want to look it up. All you have to do is Google Francis Chan rope, and it'll come right up. But he took this really long rope. It was a rope that stretched all the way across the stage on which he was speaking. And he said, try to imagine that that rope has no end. It just continues to go on forever. And he said that rope represents your life. Because he held the end of the rope in his hand. And the first 3 inches of the end that he was holding, he colored a particular color. I think it was red. And he said basically that this 3 inches represents your time here on earth. And the rest represents your eternity, the rest of your life, which goes on forever. And he made the point, as Bryant did on Wednesday night, you know, how absurd it is to make all your decisions based on that 3 inches. You know, rather than thinking about the rest of your life, which goes on forever. So you know, does that mean that we need to live a miserable life on earth in order to get to heaven? How many of you are living a miserable life? You know, I really don't think very many of us, if any, are living a miserable life here on this earth. I mean, there's no question that sometimes the world can be a miserable place, that there are things that happen that make life miserable, but at other times it can be an absolutely beautiful place. We know, because the Bible tells us so, that Jesus created this world actually for us to enjoy. Paul told Timothy that. He said he richly provides us with everything to enjoy. Believe it or not, Jesus wants you to enjoy your life on earth. He gave it to you as a gift. The writer of Ecclesiastes wrote in chapter 5, verse 19, everyone to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, it's a gift of God. Life is a gift. The problem that a lot of people have is that they fall in love with the gift rather than the giver. The only way you can truly enjoy life, as Kyle Eidelman wrote in his book, Don't Give Up, that we've been listening to on Wednesdays, is by pursuing and knowing the giver. In Deuteronomy 8, verses 10 through 19, the Israelites were about to take possession of the promised land that God had given them. And God, through Moses, warned Israel. He warned the people about the prosperity with which he was going to bless them in this new land. And the Lord wanted them to understand that when they prosper in this land he was giving them, it's because of him. He's the one who gives them the ability to gain wealth, it says. So when you prosper, and for those of you who have prospered, it's also because of him. You know, we're encouraged to enjoy life, and God is the source of those good things that bring enjoyment in life. But he also taught us that life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. John wanted his audience in 1 John 2:15 not to fall in love with the world. He warned them about that. Because the world, he said, is temporary. It's going to pass away. And I know that there are some people in this world that have the attitude, yeah, I know it's temporary, but I want to have as much fun as I can while I'm here. Gavin Childress, in his commentary on Luke, wrote, to gain this world's money, power, or popularity is meaningless if final judgment swallows you up. Jesus clearly warned you in Matthew 6:24, you know, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve both God and money. And so, you know, you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself, who am I serving? Who am I really serving in this world? You know, one of the reasons we focus so much on wealth and money and so forth is because we think it will provide security. And John Nolan, in his commentary on Luke, wrote, wealth creates the illusion of security, but in the face of death, the illusory nature of that security becomes clear. Psalm 49:16-19. Don't be afraid when a man becomes rich, when the glory of his house increases. For when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not go down after him. For though while he lives, he counts himself blessed, and though you get praise when you do well for yourself, his soul will go down or will go to the generation of his fathers who will never again see light. That's a long way to say you can't take it with you. Not only does wealth fail to provide security in the next life, but it's very insecure in this life. Now, I'm certain that the majority of you know that money does not provide security, but the real test, really, is to look at your life and examine, you know, your calendar, your checkbook. How do you spend your time and money? That's the real test. In John 6:27, Jesus said, "Don't work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you." And the food that endures to eternal life, it's the words and the work of God. So at what do you work the hardest? You know, when Jesus met the woman at the well in John 4, his disciples, you know, had gone into town to buy some food. And when they came back, they encouraged Jesus to eat some food because they hadn't had anything to eat. And Jesus responded by saying, "I have food to eat that you don't know anything about." And he then explained what he meant in verse 34. He said, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work." Is that your food? You know, Jesus' life's purpose was devoted to the work of God, which was the revealing of God's truth, the saving of souls, and we're told to follow that example. Is that your life's purpose? You know, is that what you feed on? Because that's what truly provides security for your life. If you want security in life, it's only found when you turn your life over to Jesus Christ and you begin following him. You begin serving like he did. According to 1 Peter 5:8, you know, we've heard this before, Satan prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. So if your eyes are focused on the world, then your eyes are focused on the prince of this world. And that's not Jesus. And what is really tragic is that sometimes you don't even realize it, that that's where your focus is. Because Satan is just, he's the great deceiver. And we have to be wary of that. We have to be aware of that. Over the past 25 years, some of the saddest events in which I have participated as a minister have been speaking at a funeral of an unbeliever. Fortunately, I haven't had to do that very much. But in those instances, I am limited in what I can say to comfort and bring hope to the surviving family. You know, I usually try to bring out, you know, highlights of the person's life, you know, wonderful personality traits that they had, nice things they did, you know, what they accomplished on earth. But as far as, you know, hope for the future, I really couldn't give him any. Jesus wants you, as I said before, to enjoy the things of this life, but he also encourages you to keep them in their proper perspective. They are given for your enjoyment, not your detriment. Now, I don't exactly know what everyone's priorities here are in life. I mean, I'm going to assume that because you're here, your priorities are in the proper order, but only you know if those are your priorities or not, if those are your true priorities. Because following Jesus, and I mean truly following Jesus, is certainly no walk in the park. You know, David Dockery in his commentary on Luke said, "Those who follow him must have total and daily commitment in order to survive the path of rejection that comes with following Jesus." Following Jesus will not make you a lot of friends. You know, in this life, there are a lot of activities in which we engage and commitments that we make that are difficult, that are unpleasant, that you might even dislike intensely. But you're willing to put up with it because you're trying to accomplish something. You're trying to reach a particular goal. For example, if you want to be a doctor someday, you have to go to college and get an undergraduate degree, which takes, you know, about 4 years and lots of money. And then you go to medical school, and that takes about another 4 years and a lot more money. And then you have to do your residency, which involves working very long hours and getting very little sleep for a period of anywhere between 3 to 7 years in length before you're eligible for to take the licensing exam to practice medicine, which is your ultimate goal or that person's ultimate goal. All those years, long hours, and money, though, are worth it if you reach the goal, right? Well, I'm going to assume your goal, like mine, is heaven. That's my ultimate goal. In order to get to heaven, you must become a believer and follower of Jesus. In order to follow Jesus, you got to know where he went, what he did. What did Jesus do? He was all about serving others. I mean, that's your mission. Your mission is to follow Jesus by serving others in order to reach your goal of heaven. So what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Well, whatever profit there is temporary. If you want to win in life, you really need to lose your life. In other words, you need to hand your life completely over to Jesus, and as we sometimes used to sing, let him have his way with you. Every person will make a choice. The choice is between Jesus and the world. Some people think they can choose both, but Jesus said you can't. I mean, even if you try to go 50-50, he said it won't work. It's not possible. So what Jesus is teaching you is that if you choose the world, if you choose to invest the majority of your time, money, and energy on that 3 inches of rope that represents your time here on earth, that will be the only reward you receive. And you're going to end up losing that also. I love the words of Paul in to the Corinthians in his second letter, chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. He said, therefore, we don't lose heart, though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Because what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So we focus on the spiritual rather than the temporal. And I hope that's the way you're living your life. I hope that's the way you're living your life. And if it isn't the way you're living your life, you need to change. If the Spirit has convicted you this morning, don't be ashamed. Be thankful. You know, it means that your heart hasn't become so hard that you can't change, and that's important. Change is good, especially when you realize that you were going in the wrong direction, that your focus was on the wrong things, that your focus was on what you can see rather than what you can't see. So I encourage you this morning to reevaluate yourself. What is important to you? Are you giving your life over to Jesus? Is his will your will? Is his focus your focus? And if not, it's time to change. And so I encourage you this morning to respond, to respond. If you need to change, have the courage to do it. Have the humility to do it this morning. If you're ready to start that journey with Jesus, we're ready to help you do that. We want to help you. We want to help you gain the goal of being in heaven with him. And so this morning, if that's a change you need to make, we're here to help you do that. We encourage you to respond. You can come to the front. You can go to the back. You can see us afterwards. Either way, I encourage you to change as we stand and sing this song that Mark's going to lead us in.